Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive and looking forward to tonight's show. And we're going to talk a lot of national sports, including boxing. Can never get enough boxing talk in. Every now and then you have a fight come around that you just have to talk about. Saturday, it's the fight of the year. We get Canelo Alvarez, Gennady Golovkin going toe-to-toe at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. It's the fight of the year. Mayweather-McGregor was a nice spectacle. This fight is one that I believe has the ingredients of being an all-time great. And we'll talk more about that next segment here on the show. We're going to do a whole segment on Canelo and Triple G. That's coming up in just a moment. Also tonight here on KOAL, NFL football coming your way. The Houston Texans and the Cincinnati Bengals, two teams that could sure use a win after really sluggish showings in week one. Houston was dominated by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tom Savage played just two quarters before they went with Deshaun Watson. And then as far as Cincinnati goes, I mean, they were shut out. They did a whole lot of nothing against the Baltimore Ravens. And so again, two teams in a similar spot. Who bounces back? We'll find out tonight. Kickoff time is set for 6:25. And we'll bring you the live play-by-play broadcast right here, courtesy of Westwood One on KOAL. Let's take a look at some of the other national sports headlines. And we'll begin in the NFL. Odell Beckham Jr. returned to practice in limited capacity today for the Giants. And he said he's really dealing with a 6 to 8 week injury as far as the timeline for his ankle that's already cost him against the season opener against the Dallas Cowboys. I'm going to be the first one to point this out. I was wrong about Odell Beckham. He's a wideout that I have deemed highly overrated. And while I don't believe Odell Beckham is the best wide receiver in the NFL, I don't even think I'd put him in the top three. I think we saw this past weekend, Sunday night against Dallas, just how important he is to that New York Giants offense. Because if he's not, and that Giants offense is just stale, well, it's going to be a long season. I was wrong. Odell Beckham is needed in New York. It's been 24 days since he went down following really an ugly hit that bent his left leg inward. A lot of people were holding their breath, especially fantasy owners. Beckham, despite testing the ankle before the game, said he wasn't really close to playing at all, hadn't practiced that week. The Giants don't know how long it's going to be before he comes back, but obviously he was missed in that contest. He's a top playmaker, and he's really starting to make progress, practice for the very first time today. Beckham said that he was running, jumping, cutting a little bit better, felt a little bit more free during the Thursday practice today. But it's really important to see how he actually responds to the light workout tomorrow before team officials and doctors will actually give an update on when they expect him to return to the field. So there's a lot of speculation on that. Kind of a similar situation as Andrew Luck in Indianapolis. I don't think he's anywhere near being ready to play at this point in time either. So it's just something that fantasy owners will definitely have to monitor. If you're a Giants or a Colts fan, those are two players that your team desperately needs. Let's take a look at what's happening in Major League Baseball. There's all kinds of great stuff happening here as we get down to the final stretch. The schedule, full slate of games taking place tonight. The Cleveland Indians looking to extend their winning streak, which is just absolutely insane right now. The Indians are going to be back on the field tonight as they take on Kansas City. Start time for this game is set to go in the 5 o'clock hour. The Indians are looking for win number 22 straight. Insane how good this team has played. Because of the massive streak, Cleveland now has a plus-minus of plus 222, which is number one in Major League Baseball. Go figure, right? 5 o'clock hour games, we get Baltimore at the Yankees, the Braves at the Nationals. Miami will travel to meet Philadelphia. I talked about Cleveland and Kansas City, the Indians playing host. Josh Tomlin will be on the hill for Cleveland tonight. We go to the 6 o'clock hour. Seattle travels to meet Texas. Felix Hernandez will be back on the bump for Seattle. The Cubs play host to the Mets. The Blue Jays will travel to take on Minnesota. And the nightcap tonight, the Astros battle the Angels. That's the set for tonight. A couple of finals already today. Cincinnati falling to the St. Louis Cardinals on the road by a final score of 5-2. Boston topped Oakland 6-2. Drew Pomeranz got the win on the hill. The White Sox easily defeated the Tigers 17-7. James Shields logged the victory for the White Sox. One game right now in progress, and the Diamondbacks are rolling the Colorado Rockies 7-0. That one in the bottom of the seventh inning as we speak. As far as the National League standings go in the West, the Dodgers have clinched a playoff spot, but the Diamondbacks and Rockies, more than likely a preview of what we'll see in the wild card. And these two teams have slugged it out, both playing pretty good baseball. Arizona's won 6 out of their last 10. The Rockies have won 8 out of their last 10, but they did suffer a loss to the Diamondbacks yesterday. And as it sits right now, they're about to suffer another loss. The Dodgers with a 10-game cushion in the NL West. The Rockies would be the second wild card if things stand pat right now, and they hold just a 3-game lead on the Brewers and the Cardinals for that final wild card spot. Arizona has it all, but locked up right now. They'd have to really blow it down the stretch. They'll have a 7-game lead in that regard. The Cubs, 2.5-game lead right now in the NL Central. It's been about that throughout the All-Star break. And the National League East, the Nationals, they have a 20-game lead on the Miami Marlins. So the National League playoff picture, pretty clear at this point in time. Odds are it's going to be the Cubs and the Nationals. The Dodgers would take on the winner of the Diamondbacks and Rockies, so you'd have the NL West going toe-to-toe in both the wild card and then the NLDS. The AL wild card, a little bit murkier. And I say that because the Indians obviously have ran away with it. They have a 3-game lead right now on the Astros, a 13-game lead in their division thanks to this 21-game win streak. And then you have the Astros and the Red Sox comfortably ahead of the field in their prospective division. The Red Sox 4 up right now on the Yankees. The wild card in the American League, the Yankees. And then after that, it's the Twins, but right behind 2 games, the Anaheim Angels hold just a 2-game deficit right now against the Minnesota Twins in the AL wildcard. So things are definitely starting to shape up. In baseball, as we get down to the final 20-25 games of the season, definitely an exciting time. That's a recap of everything that is happening right now in the national sports scene. A little bit of a dead day. That's okay. We have some boxing and NFL talk to get to. Plus, we'll give you the rundown on what's happening local sports-wise. It's all coming up next here on this Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. Last night on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, the Helper Rams defeated the Mont Harmon Pirates 29-15 in the first of 2 meetings on the football field this season. Helper was led by 8th grader Davin Moss, who accumulated 164 yards on the ground on 13 carries while also reaching the end zone one time. Helper also received a boost from Jacob Robertson, who scored 2 touchdowns. He accumulated 45 yards off of 10 attempts. Helper was the first team to score, and they never looked back as they grabbed a 14-point victory. Mont Harmon on the opposite side of the field was led on the ground by Ridge Nelson, who scored 1 touchdown and also ran for 46 yards off of just 2 attempts. Mont Harmon quarterback Jordan Fawcett completed 3 of 5 attempts for 24 yards while also throwing 1 interception. You can watch the replay of last night's contest by visiting KOALITV.com and clicking on the Mont Harmon helper link. We step away from middle school sports and take a look at the high school sports scene, which will be extremely busy today for the Emory Spartans. The volleyball team will look to continue their winning ways on the court as they play host to San Juan at 6 p.m. Emory earned a 3-2 victory earlier in the week over the Grand Red Devils. That contest was also at the Spartan Center. Tonight's contest with San Juan is scheduled for 6 p.m. The Emory Lady Spartan girls soccer squad will look to get their 4th region victory in 5 tries tonight as they play host to the Richfield Wildcats. Emory strolled past Grand on Tuesday by a final score of 4-1. And the girls' tennis team will also be in action today. They'll play host to the San Juan Broncos. Start time for that contest is set for 2 p.m. We'll stick with high school sports, but we move over to Carbon High. And the Lady Dinos today will return to the soccer field as they take on the Union Cougars. It'll be the second and final meeting between the two schools this year. Carbon won the first contest just a few weeks back by a final score of 3-2. The boys' golf team will travel on the road. They'll go to Canyon Hills Golf Course. Again, that's the home course of the Juab Wasps. And the Carbon Lady Dinos will play host to Delta tonight at 6:30 p.m. Sticking with high school sports, yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by Emory Spartan football coach John Famalo. Coach Famalo joins Drive Time Sports every Thursday to talk about the team's most recent outing and also preview the upcoming contest on Friday. Coach Famalo started by talking about the team's most recent loss, a 35-14 setback to the Manti Templars.
I mean, defensively, we just had some breakdown. I mean, the way we started, our defense started a little bit different. We got out of position a lot of times, and, you know, they took advantage of where we got out of position. And so it was on our part as coaching staff to recognize some things, to get some kids moved around. And at that point, we were a little bit rocked on our heels and trying to catch our breath. And, you know, by that time, it was a little bit too late.
Famalo continued by talking about where his team is at now that they're four games deep into the season and preparing for the region opener on Friday.
The pacing game in this last game, you know, we were kind of scratching our heads. And, you know, I think practice this week has been, okay, let's get back to the basics for the fact that, you know, I think we've tried to move on, but I think our kids have not continued to grasp the basics of this, what we're trying to do. And so it's a step backwards. It's not where I wanted to be, but at the same time, you know, there's some communication things that we talked about as a team, and hopefully we've worked that out, and we'll see that as we progress this week.
Famalo continued by talking about Friday's opponent, the Judge Memorial Bulldogs.
I know they got some great athletes on that side. Coach Cordova is a great coach, been coaching for over 15 years, and, you know, he's been under his tutelage of his dad. So it's a guy that knows the game and knows, you know, how to get kids going.
We'll have more regarding the Emory Judge Memorial Contest in the coming days. Kickoff for this contest is set for Friday right here on KOAL. Start time is set for 7 p.m. Live coverage will begin at 6:30. And we end by moving over to the national sports scene. Tonight on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, the Houston Texans will take on the Cincinnati Bengals. Both teams are 0-1 so far this season, looking to get back on the right track. Houston suffered a 29-7 loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars, while Cincinnati was shut out at the hands of the Baltimore Ravens. Start time for tonight's contest is set for 6:20. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. We got a huge boxing event. That may be an understatement coming up this Saturday. The fight that I know boxing fans have been waiting for a very long time. Going down to T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, about at 160 pounds. Canelo Alvarez going up against Triple G, Gennady Golovkin, in one of the biggest fights that we have seen in quite some time. I think you probably have to go back to Mayweather-Pacquiao to find a fight that has been more anticipated by diehard boxing fans and by boxing pundits around the country. Joining us right now to talk about that and more, we have a great friend of mine, great friend of the show, Tony Whitby. He's been with us for the past 7 years here on Drive Time Sports, breaking down boxing fights, so of course we have to bring him in for this one. Tony, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem, JP. Always glad to be on.
This is one of those fights that I'm telling even the lighthearted casual boxing fans, you can't miss. Tony, it's a fight that has been building for quite some time. I'm a little bit disturbed at the lack of national attention it's actually getting. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that a lot of attention was basically given to Mayweather-McGregor. Yet at the same time, those who follow boxing, even if you just casually watch big fights, you're anticipating this bout. We get Canelo, who again is one of those guys that has been the face of boxing or pegged as the face of boxing for the last 6, 7, 8 years. You have Triple G, who has organically found a way to become one of the premier names in the sport of boxing. Two contrasting styles going toe-to-toe at 160 pounds, two non-Americans actually headlining a pay-per-view in Vegas, and the buzz around it in Vegas, as we've talked to several people around the fight this week, they say it's unlike anything. It's fantastic. This is going to be a great night for boxing.
Yeah, this is our Super Bowl. I mean, without a doubt, this is our Super Bowl this weekend. Boxing fans, wholeheartedly, real purists of the sport, you know, they held off and saved their money for this fight because they knew what they were going to be getting. Two champions, you know, two guys that have been literally kind of eyeballing each other for the last at least 2 years, maybe a little bit longer. Golovkin's always had this somewhat comparison of Marvin Hagler as he's destroying everyone and nobody wants to fight him and he can't get the biggest fight that he wants. This is finally his chance, his stage to do so. Well, you have a younger guy in Canelo where, you know, outside of the Mayweather fight has been very dominant in his, you know, in his weight classes. You know, been in some really fun, entertaining fights, you know, has a good style to him. And at the same time, hasn't really had a partner to really give him full credit for what he's been able to achieve. Though his track record is very solid. And he's never been afraid to face anyone. And this is exactly the right temperature for this really good fight to happen. And stylistically, these two fighters match up with each other very well. This is not a case of oil versus vinegar. This is two guys that do like to come forward, do like to mix it up. They do have different styles in some cases, where Canelo's more of a counter puncher, but still loves to throw a lot of punches, even though they're in short bursts. Golovkin will go more jab heavy, very sticky, stick 1-2, but also has a really good right hook. And when he goes to the body, that's when he's at his best. This is this has the makings for probably the best fight weekend that can be out there, you know, in all of 2017, hands down.
I know that sports in general, I think boxing definitely fits in to this particular rhetoric. If it's a what have you done for me lately type deal, right? We could agree on that, Tony, correct? It's a what have you done for me lately type deal with all sports across the board.
Yeah, and especially in boxing, what did you do in your last fight? It's always that case.
Exactly. And because of that, I think maybe this has affected the promotion a little bit because, let's be honest, most lighthearted boxing fans could not tell you who Daniel Jacobs is. Now, I believe that he's going to give several fighters, most fighters, problems. I do not use that as a detriment to Triple G at all. Canelo was on one of the biggest stages of boxing this past May, and it was a boring fight. It was a boring fight against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. It was a boring, boring fight. And I wonder if maybe that's played in to the fact that this fight hasn't been pushed to the level that it could have been. So my question, you know, taking that into consideration, would this fight have been better off happening this past May rather than this Saturday?
That's a really good question. That you could look at it in that standpoint and saying, hey, coming off the Liam Smith fight, where obviously Canelo dominated that fight, and coming off the Cal Brook fight for Golovkin, it possibly could have. However, there is the misstep on there that there would have been one more additional fight to kind of get in. I think both of them knew that this was going to be September 2017 regardless. I also do think that Canelo really wanted to have the Mexican versus Mexican, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez, even though his name isn't as big as it once was. That was a huge payday opportunity for him, and that payday would have been decreased if he would have lost to Golovkin going into that type of fight. So I think they really wanted to get the most out of the biggest fight possible at that time, and that caused Golovkin to have to go out and essentially recover or get another bout, which he did against Danny Jacobs. Listen, I mean, Golovkin was knocking out, I think the record was somewhere, you know, 20 knockouts in a row, something insane or asinine as far as what he did. It is kind of stylistically where, if you remember at one time, Mike Tyson was knocking out every single person. I remember that growing up. And the one time he doesn't knock somebody out, you're like, oh, Mike Tyson's slipping. That is one case that could be, you know, an argument for this fight that makes it even of a closer fight because Golovkin is 35. Now, mind you, he came into the sport later than most people, and at the same time, hey, by knocking people out, he doesn't have the same amount of damage that other people would have on them. So, you know, could this be a case of Golovkin getting old overnight, and we're actually going to see some wear and tear in him going up against, you know, Canelo? That's one of the fun questions of the sport, but if I, you know, your point's well taken. But I think it only made economic sense for both these fighters to get one more fight in, i.e. put one more belt on the line, and then two, obviously getting Canelo the biggest fight at the time with Chavez.
Joined right now again by Tony Whitby as we break down Saturday's mega fight between Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin. We'll look at resume here for a moment, Tony, and maybe this is why I give Canelo the edge just a little bit. First off, regardless of your opinion on this fight, Triple G has never been on a stage this big. Hasn't happened. Nobody can convince me otherwise because it's factual. He's never been on a stage this big. You can't say that about Canelo. He's been to this point before. He fought Floyd Mayweather Jr. He's fought Miguel Cotto. He's fought Amir Khan. He's fought guys that have tremendous backing. You know, even when he fought Shane Mosley, it's a name that even the casual fans would recognize, and it was on the undercard of a Mayweather-Cotto fight. Canelo has been there before. Triple G's resume, outside of Lemieux and Jacobs, I mean, you really have to stretch things to say, okay, you know what, that's a formidable win. That's a win against an opponent that makes me say, this guy is for real. Now, I'm not saying that Triple G's not real. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying if we start by comparing the resume, there's no doubt the advantage here goes to Canelo.
This is why boxing is fun. This is why I love doing this on a daily basis with people. Because there's essentially two points to your logic here. Number one, you're absolutely right. This is the first time that Golovkin's ever going to be fighting in Vegas. That part of what your stance is 100% true. And that can mess with a fighter's mind. Big time. This is the first time he's ever been on a stage to this caliber, to this level. You know, Canelo's been doing this since the Mosley fight, you know, since that was the first time. Well, what I was going to say is since the Sugar Shane Mosley versus Mayweather fight, where we saw him on the undercard, mm-hmm. where, you know, he fought Miguel Cotto's brother, Jose Cotto. That being said, he's used to being in the limelight. He's used to being in pay-per-view fights. He's used to being big, giant fights. Golovkin's never seen anything on this scale from a PR standpoint. That said, if you go resume-wise, absolutely right. Canelo has the names, you know, the Mosleys, you know, the Mayweather fight, whatever the case, the Cotto's. He has the names, but did he face them in their primes? Not so much. Did he face them in their natural weight classes? Not so much. There's always some sort of little shaved edge, much like other fighters do. That's part of boxing. But the other thing for Canelo, the knock against Canelo, he's never faced a real middleweight at middleweight. So, and that's exactly what's happening this weekend. So both of them have their little knocks, their little chinks in their armor, if you will, to where you could argue one way and then you can sway back the other way for a fighter. I mean, that's what really makes it interesting. I haven't seen Canelo fight David Lemieux. I wouldn't know how that fight would go. I think that would be a super entertaining fight to watch. But, you know, it just goes to say there's very apples to oranges when you're making these comparisons.
Sure, sure. I agree with you. In fact, if I'm going to look at one particular fight on Canelo's resume that I gain the most from in actually breaking down this fight, and this may sound absolutely stupid to you and many others out there, watch the James Kirkland fight. And I say that because it's the only fight that I can find outside of a couple of moments in the Cotto fight where Canelo was actually tagged. It's a fight to where I felt that Canelo actually felt the opponent's power. I go back to the Kirkland fight. It ended quick. It's a quick fight. It was like three or four rounds, if I remember right off the top of my head. Yep. But there were times in this fight where Canelo impressed me walking uphill and moving through some very, very powerful Kirkland punches. And I think in retrospect, you're going to have to see that this Saturday, Tony. He's going to have to walk through because, again, we're talking about a three-inch reach advantage here for Golovkin. At times in this fight, Canelo's going to have to walk through some powerful punches. And in the Kirkland fight, he proved that he could do it.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people think that Canelo's best chance to win this fight is to actually get on the inside and fight, which is an interesting thought process, you know, not only for the reach standpoint, but people discredit, one, Canelo's speed. You know, when he throws punches, he can throw three or four punches in a blink of an eye. You know, he's not as fast as Amir Khan or, you know, a Gary Russell Jr. or even Floyd Mayweather at this point, but it's just the idea that this guy's a big, bulky kid, and he can still throw pretty fast for his speed or for his size. That said, Golovkin can crack, and so it's going to be interesting to see that comparison, to see what's going to happen here. You know, as far as Golovkin, we've seen him taking some shots against, you know, Dave Lemieux, Curtis Stevens, and he took them pretty well. Some would argue when he took a punch from Danny Jacobs, that was probably the most hurt that he's ever looked. Hands down, this fight has the makings for it's such a close fight, one way or the other. It's going to be entertaining for either how long it lasts. Most people do not think it's going to go to a decision. They show a lot of respect to each other in outside the ring, but I think that both of them know that this is something that, you know, we can't keep having these big fights end up going to a decision constantly unless it's, you know, merited and warranted.
With that being said, again, Golovkin is 35 years old. You look at Canelo, he's 27. Still, I believe that Triple G is young enough to where we could get a compelling duel. We could get a second. We could get a rematch. We could even get a trilogy. And Tony, if you go back and you look at boxing, and I think it's far-fetched for a trilogy. Canelo would have to win on Saturday, I think, for us to get a trilogy. But at the same time, if you go back and you look at some of the great rivalries in boxing, trilogies are made out of great rivalries. You and I have had this conversation before. There's nothing better in the sport of boxing than a compelling trilogy. It's been a very long time since I've seen two fighters with the magnitude of this particular fight and saying this could be a terrific rivalry, a terrific trilogy that we look back on in 30 years and tell our kids and our grandkids, damn, I remember where I was when the third fight took place. Been a long time since we've been able to say that in boxing, but I think the ingredients are here if we could ever get to that point.
Yeah, without a doubt. And just to get nuts and bolts about it, there is a rematch clause in regards to Canelo's favor, meaning that if Golovkin does win, then there, you know, Canelo can opt in for a rematch. However, if Golovkin loses and Canelo wins, there is no guaranteed of a rematch in that standpoint. So Canelo could essentially take his belts and go home, so to speak. That being said, if the fight was close enough, if the you know, the aesthetics of the fight were that entertaining, I think there'd be enough pressure on Canelo to make a second fight, the need, the want, the drive. So sometimes it doesn't need to have rematch clauses to have a, you know, in order to do, you know, a roundabout or a triple trilogy. But you're right. This would be the beginnings of it, you know, but it's one of those things, like, let's get cast the first time first before we can really get in there, because you know, we can talk trilogies all the time, but they don't always end up happening. So this could potentially be one, without a doubt.
Yeah,
but we got to make sure that Saturday night lives up to the promise.
Definitely, definitely. Tony, before I let you go, break it down for me. How do you see this fight going? And before you break it down, I've talked about this fight throughout the week. I'll go ahead and give my prediction right now. I think Canelo goes to the body. I think he goes to the body early. I think because of that, he takes a couple of shots from Golovkin. I think he's able to withstand some power early on. I think he wears him down. I think once we get to the championship rounds, you see a slower, less powerful Triple G, and because of that, Canelo sneaks out a victory close, 7-5 on the scorecards. Give me Canelo once. Give me Canelo 115-113.
You know, here's one of those weird dynamics that I never like going into a fight is a fighter having a child. I know that sounds so odd and weird, but it's one of those things. If I'm watching boxing, I see the boxer wearing a knee brace, I never bet on that guy. It's just one of those. There's certain type of things, and you know, Golovkin just had a child recently in the last couple weeks. And that always, in my opinion, it's only an opinion, that, you know, I've been chasing boxing the last 15 years, and this is something I've always noticed, that a boxer that's coming out either just recently getting married or having a child, something in their personal life somehow softens them in a certain way. Well, maybe that does make this more of an entertaining fight. That being said, this is Golovkin's one chance. They've been building for his entire career. He's not going to get another shot like this. He can't leave it up to the judges. He cannot. If he does, the probability does state that it's probably going to be Canelo winning this fight, which is why I think it's going to force an entertaining fight to happen. I do think Canelo takes the first round or two. I do think that Golovkin will start to come on probably around 3 to 4. I think as long as he's leading with that jab and getting in with that right hook to the body, he would actually be the one slowing down Canelo. I think the weight that Canelo's putting on, bulking up, may do him some good in the power department, but it's going to slow him down in the endurance department. And I actually think that Golovkin's going to win by knockout. I'm going to say round 10. And however, if it goes to a decision, I think you're going to win this one, JB. But I'm going round 10, Golovkin KO.
Tony, always so much fun to get you on and talk boxing. Next week, recap of the fight. You got time for that, right?
Oh, I definitely, definitely.
Fantastic. We'll talk to you then, Tony. I appreciate the time.
No problem. Have a good one, JB.
We're going to break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up right after this when we return on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Live from the KOAL newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Take that for data. Ah!
We're back on Drive Time Sports. talk some Major League Baseball. History is on the line tonight for the Cleveland Indians. And they take the field against the Kansas City Royals in the 5 o'clock hour. A win tonight for the Indians, and they will own the largest win streak in the history of Major League Baseball. They've won 21 games. They are now in sole possession of the American League's record for consecutive wins. They've tied two different sections of the Chicago Cubs for the record as well. Twice the Cubs won 21 in a row. They can break that record tonight. And don't get me wrong, it's one of the most impressive streaks that we have seen. You look at the standings, and you see a win streak of 21 next to any team's name. It's mind-boggling. Yet they only hold a two-and-a-half-game lead, over the Houston Astros for home field in the American League. So the Indians had to play this kind of baseball. Their home record, eerily similar to their road record, 42-29 at home, 48-27 on the road. Plus-minus differential, plus 222, easily tops in Major League Baseball. And that's because they have played lights out over the last couple of weeks while other teams have kind of floated by. The Dodgers lost 11 in a row. This was a team that we thought could get to 117 wins, remember? They lost 11 in a row, the largest losing skid in that franchise's history since moving to LA. The Indians started peaking at the right time. And that's what's important. I look at the streak, I get it, it's impressive, but what's more important for Terry Francona's group is that they're peaking at the right time. I'm not going to sit here and try to be a character and just say, look, I'm not impressed by the 21-game win streak, although there's some variables involved in this. It's different than the NBA. It's different than the NFL. It's different than college basketball or college football or college baseball. It's just different, and I'll explain why. The one variable that doesn't get mentioned when you talk about a Major League Baseball win streak. The Indians will take on the Royals tonight. They have contributed three times to the 21-game win streak, okay? Three games the Kansas City Royals have lost to the Indians during this incredible run that the Indians are on. And again, I want to go back to it. I am not taking anything away from the Cleveland Indians. I'm just pointing out a fact here that makes the 21-game win streak not seem as impressive as it looks on paper. Because it's never happened in Major League Baseball. If they win tonight, they have accomplished something that nobody else has. I just want to throw this out there. The Royals have already contributed three times to this win streak. You take the numbers on another step up. The Detroit Tigers, a team that right now is 26 games under 500. They have lost to the Cleveland Indians seven times just this month. That's a variable that you get in Major League Baseball with streaks that make it uncomparable to other sports. You don't play any team seven times in the NBA. You don't play any team seven times in the NHL. You don't do that in the NFL, obviously. College basketball, college baseball, just doesn't happen. That's a third of the streak. A third of Cleveland's 21-game win streak is due in part to the fact that the Detroit Tigers are a bad baseball team and they can't beat the Indians. The Royals are three games, and the Royals, as it sits right now, are a game under 500. So 10 of the 21 wins for the Indians during this streak have come against teams, well, two teams, and both of them are under the 500 mark. Now, tonight, the Royals find themselves in somewhat familiar territory. Is it a coincidence? The Royals were the team that the A's defeated back in 2002 to set what was, until Wednesday, the American League win streak record. We'll see if they play the same role tonight, something that we'll just have to wait and see, obviously. But I thought that statistic was unique, and it's something that you just don't think of. The fact that the Indians have beat a lot of, well, two bad teams 10 times during the 21-game win streak. And look, it's baseball. You have to, you know, you play bad teams, you have to take care of business. The other squads that they have beaten during this time frame, they beat the Red Sox once. They swept the Yankees in a four-game set. That's impressive. They swept the White Sox in a four-game set. Meh. And then they beat the Orioles. Still, it's baseball. Crazy things happen. Again, I'm not trying to take anything away from this win streak. I'm just pointing out something that doesn't get mentioned. I'll tell you what does make this win streak look really impressive. That's when you look at the numbers. When you dig deep into what this team has accomplished, even though a lot of it has been against subpar competition. Since the winning streak actually began, the Indians have scored double digits six times. That's impressive in baseball. 21 games, they have scored double digits six times. The most runs that they have given up, it was that game to Boston. They allowed six runs in that contest. That was the first game of the 21-game win streak. They won 13-6. Shutouts during the course of this, well, they shut out the Royals three straight games. They shut out the Tigers once 10-0. They shut out the Orioles once 5-0. Shut out the Tigers two more times, 11-0, 2-0. And so the shutouts have been there, but they've managed to score runs as well. But the key for the Indians during this win streak is to score runs early, and that's exactly what they have done. During the streak, they have outscored their opponent 68-13 in the first, second, and third innings. Innings 1 through 3 over the last 21 games, they are plus 55. That's impressive. The most impressive statistic for me during this 21-game win streak is the fact that they have won 11 straight on the road. And that's the longest for this franchise in over 15 years. That's the most impressive thing to me. We know that Francona's group can play baseball. Rhythm is a true thing. But the fact that they're getting it done on the road, that's what's impressive. 11 of these 21 games have been on the road. They've outscored their opponents 134-32 over the last 20 games. So they have been dominating. And again, this goes against the logic of me talking about teams that they are beating that are under 500. They're not just beating them, they're destroying them. So that's a 102-run differential, plus 102-run differential, the best 20-game margin in the history of the franchise, and the largest by any Major League Baseball team since the Yankees in 1939. Now the Indians are 90-56, 30 games over 500, their best mark since sitting 97-64 back in 1999. The Indians have won six consecutive series. That's their longest streak since a run of seven back in 2007, which is, again, extremely impressive. But again, it's all about getting out to a quick start. Across the winning streak, the Indians have trailed for just four innings out of 189. And it's because the run differential in the first three innings is astronomical. Seven shutouts over the 21 games as well. Here's one more number for you on the Indians' win streak. They began the month of September with a record of 14-0. That was their best start ever to a calendar month and best by any Major League Baseball team since the Twins in 1991. Doing work. Oh, and by the way, their starters have gone 19-0 with a 1.6 ERA. Tonight, the Indians look to make history as they take on the Kansas City Royals. Again, it'll be the fourth time that the Royals have contributed to a loss in this win streak if the Indians can top them. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back with the final touches on this Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports with some NFL football talk here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
This is John Wall from the Washington Wizards, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buskerings on KOAL 7:50 AM.
Wall shoots over Bayless. Dagger! John Wall with a career-high 47 points.
We're about an hour away from Thursday Night Football on KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. Tonight, we get the Bengals and the Texans, two teams that are definitely looking to bounce back from a rather lackluster performance in Week 1, to say the least. The Texans were so bad in that game against the Jaguars, and the Bengals just never got anything rolling. Tonight, rookie Deshaun Watson. You know, he's a Heisman contender over the last couple of seasons in college, led Clemson to a national championship. He's only 22 years old. In fact, he turns 22 tonight, and he gets his first NFL career start. Looked a lot better than Tom Savage in Sunday's game. Did throw an interception, did lead the team on their only scoring drive of the contest. In one half of football, Savage was 7 of 13 for 62 yards. He was also sacked six times. Net loss of 33 yards on those sacks. Watson was sacked four times. The quarterback rating for both of these guys, neither was good, let's be honest. But Watson did spark some energy. It was a different feel to the game once Watson went out onto the field. But I think, honestly, looking at tonight's game for both teams, offensive line play, who can win in the trenches? You don't have to be a football guru to be able to point out poor offensive line play. And the bottom line is, for the Texans last week, it doesn't matter if it's Tom Savage or DeSean Jackson. At the end of the day, you can't give up 10 sacks in a game. That's insane. They gave up 10 sacks to Jacksonville last week. Cincinnati, they weren't much better. Their offensive line had plenty of problems. They didn't re-sign their two best offensive linemen. They lost Andrew Wentworth. He went to Los Angeles. Kevin Zietler went to Cleveland. Their best remaining linemen, Russell Bodine and Clint Boiling, they can kind of develop something, I guess, as far as the run game goes, but the rest of the offensive line is bad. Andy Dalton was terrorized in this contest last week against Baltimore. Terrell Suggs gave him more than enough problems throughout the game, and that has to be something that is fixed if either of these two teams want to get a win tonight. That was the common ground that they shared last week, terrible offensive line play. Now, for the Texans, J.J. Watt needs to make Andy Dalton a runner. Got to flush him out of the pocket. Andy Dalton has trouble against pressure. We saw this last week. We saw this last season. He was sacked 41 times and pressured on 22% of his dropbacks. Because of that, he didn't have the best season. And again, I can correlate this tonight with the Houston Texans. Against Jacksonville, they didn't get any pressure on Blake Bortles. And because of that, Blake Bortles wasn't terrible last week. Didn't commit a turnover. But because of the lack of push they got up front, Leonard Fournette was able to run for 100 yards. So again, to me, tonight's game, it's all about the trenches. I think there's plenty of skill position players in this game that's definitely gonna make it entertaining, to say the least. This is why I love Cincinnati offensively. A.J. Green, Brandon LaFell, Tyler Eifert, Giovanni Bernard, Jeremy Hill, Joe Mixon. The Bengals offense has all kinds of weapons that could make any game really exciting if you like offense. Last week, they couldn't get moving. And it wasn't because Cincinnati couldn't move the ball. They could. What killed them, they were in the red zone three times. They turned the football over because of the pressure that was applied to Andy Dalton. So again, you look at the offensive weapons that they have. It's exciting. But the main story tonight is going to be Deshaun Watson. I think that Bill O'Brien, who again, the Texans went to the playoffs last season. I wouldn't say Bill O'Brien's on the hot seat. But for Bill O'Brien to leave Deshaun Watson on the bench, he got a lot of explaining to do to the front office when you have a quarterback in Tom Savage who has never been glowing. Like, he was better than Brock Osweiler last year. That's not saying a whole lot. Houston needs a quarterback that can maneuver around the pocket, break tackles, escape, show speed, show agility. Tom Savage can't do that. Deshaun Watson can. Now, again, I didn't think Watson was great last week against Jacksonville. And he's probably not going to be great tonight either. He doesn't have a great arm, part of the reason why he slipped a little bit in the first round of the draft. Still has to work on reading NFL defenses, which is going to take some time. In Cincinnati, if you watch them defensively, they do a lot of maneuvering before the snap. They disguise a lot of coverages. So I think that this game for Watson is going to be a tad bit troubling. But if you watched any bit of that game last week between Jacksonville and Houston, you saw a different team when Deshaun Watson came out, just more energized. The crowd was definitely energized. Anytime you have a quarterback who has this much hype around him, who was this good in college, anytime the starting quarterback, who you know is a stopgap or fill-gap quarterback, anytime he is struggling, the crowd's going to get restless. So Watson just pumped some energy into the crowd last week. He's not going to have to worry about that tonight because obviously tonight the Texans, they're on the road, so that's not going to be a problem. But all in all, Deshaun Watson, I think, is probably the best option because the offensive line is so bad, and you know that he's going to be able to maneuver around in the pocket. NFL football coming up tonight here on KOAL. We are out of time. I want to thank Tony Whitby for joining us on the show tomorrow. We're going to talk more NFL football. We'll recap tonight's game, look ahead to Week 2 on Sunday and Monday. Plus, we'll talk some more Major League Baseball. Have a great Thursday. Stay dry. I'm Jordan Buscarini, and I'm out.